From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Today, counting down to game week 23, West Ham's Jade Lings and other new unveilings. And should we stick with big assets despite their failings? All that plus buying Brighton, return to Spurs and more in this, the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Hello, Fantasy Manager. I'm James Richardson. Got lots to discuss with you today with Game Week 21 and almost all of Game Week 22 since our last show, and Game Week 23 imminent. And with us here to help us get our team sorted out for that, we've got international broadcaster and football writer Julien Laurence. Hello, Julien.
Hi, James. Hi, everyone.
They say hi. Author and journalist Daniel Story is with us. Daniel.
Hi, James.
Hello. And from the FPL family, Sam Bonfield. Hi, Sam.
Hiya, James.
Hello. As I say, Game Week 21 has gone, almost all of 22 as well. We've got Thursday night Spurs-Chelsea yet to happen as we record this. As it stands, Sam, the big question is, are you back on top in the FPL family?
Yes, of course, James.
All right. I mean, there's no of course, because last week you weren't, so...
It never lasts long. It never lasts long. You've got to let him have his moments of glory every now and then.
Right. Right. Well, it's been a topsy-turvy season. The lead changing hand in the Premier League and in the FPL Family League and all sorts of other things. Lots of lessons to draw from Game Week 22. Game Week 21, meantime, was a really quiet one, I think, for most managers. Daniel, you played your wild card there over the weekend. How did that go?
Yeah, I played it after 21. Purely because, well, two things. Firstly, I wasn't doing very well. And secondly, I wanted a bench of likely starters. The normal strategy of cheap players on the bench doesn't seem to work at the moment. So it worked this week. If Phil Foden was in the team, he didn't play a minute. Mikel Antonio got 8 points off the bench, came in.
Ah, okay.
There you go. Oh, well done.
Oh, so it did work.
Yeah,
it worked. I'd heard that it hadn't been successful.
For the first time this season, something was.
Wow. Our thoughts are with Fantasy Manager Ashley Howard. I don't know if you saw this.
Incredible.
On social media. He wildcarded for Game Week 21 over the weekend. None of his City players, he brought three in, saw action. He had Sadio Mane, who was out. So he only had seven active players. Of those seven, the highest scorer was Bruno with 3 points. So collectively, for his wildcard team, he picked up 12 points, 12, and he had 11 left on the bench.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, I think comparable to that would be the manager who triple captained Jan Bednarek for Game Week 22. This genuinely happened. Somebody put a triple captain on Jan Bednarek for the game for Saints away at Man United, for which Jan Bednarek got -7.
It's literally the worst thing that could ever happen, isn't it, this one?
Yeah. Has anyone ever got less than -7, Sam?
I don't think so. I can't remember anyone ever having got less than -7. And particularly if you triple captained him, -21. That's more than that guy's whole team got last week.
Yeah.
It's hard to do worse than penalty, red card, own goal, 9 goals conceded, isn't it?
I think 49 people captain him full stop. Which is still -14. It's still a lot as well.
Yeah. I'm curious as to why... Unless they were just having a laugh, they decided to give him the armband. But then I guess one thing is that at the moment, and this is, I think, a thing we might all be finding, that because of the big names not delivering or other big names being out injured, we're getting increasingly clustered around the same group of players. So I think particularly with your captaincy picks, something that might help you get a differential, an edge on your rivals is really appreciated. And that's something we'll be looking at a little bit later on. Of course, slightly related to that theme, the transfer window closed on Monday, which saw one or two players that might be of interest to us changing clubs. Anyone who caught your eye who you think might be worth bringing in the short term?
Well, Jesse Lingard certainly got off to a good start, didn't he? Came in on Monday evening, played last night and got a brace. Can't ask for a much better introduction to the league than that. And actually, West Ham have been on really, really good form. So I think he's definitely one to keep an eye on, particularly playing alongside, you know, players like Suchek and Antonio. There's really plenty of opportunity for him to get further FPL points as time goes on too.
He does have a bit of a history of starting very well at clubs, Jesse Lingard. But as you say, West Ham are doing brilliantly. They're doing particularly well in terms of their player acquisitions. So Soucek and back on the score sheet as well this midweek. So they do look like a really productive place to do your FPL shopping. Brighton as well, who've now picked up back-to-back wins against Spurs and Liverpool. And as we'll see later on in our long view section, have great fixtures on the way.
Yeah, and defensively incredibly solid. Sanchez is, Sam mentioned before the show, is the lowest price starting goalkeeper at the moment. Ben White is the same price, 4.4 million. I think he's potentially a great option. They don't get many attacking points, those defenders, but keeping so many clean sheets at the moment against decent teams that it doesn't really matter.
Does anyone actually have any Brighton team players in their team at the moment?
No, I used to have Lamptey, and of course when he got injured, he disappeared off out of my side. But Brighton are definitely, and in particular the Brighton defence, are definitely ones that are on my radar, because I think they are offering such amazing value for money right now.
Mm. All right, well, we'll talk about them a little bit later on. We've got loads of interesting angles on the upcoming game week 23, the deadline for which, as you're probably aware, is this Saturday morning, 11 a.m. UK time. Let's take a look then at the weekend's fixtures. Game week 23 kicks off Saturday lunchtime with Aston Villa against Arsenal. Burnley hosts high-flying Brighton. Newcastle get what's left of Saints. We'll see if they react to this 9-0 as well as they did last year's one. Fulham are up against West Ham at tea time, and Man United have Everton on Saturday evening. On the Sunday, Spurs against West Brom, which should be very exciting. Wolves host Leicester. Liverpool get a visit from Man City. Then on Monday, Leeds against Crystal Palace. Huh. Which games do you want to pick out from that lot? Jules?
I go for the Leeds-Crystal Palace game because my boy Rafinha, who we tipped on a few shows ago, is doing so well. Leeds don't always win, but I find him more and more consistent in what he produces for this team. I think he looks such a class player. And as we said a few weeks ago, he gets in the position where he will get you a goal or an assist. He will do something in a game. And because they run so much and because they attack so much, I think if you haven't put Rafinha in your team right now, and he's still quite low ownership, to be fair. I mean, for me, he's like, okay, this is a really good, it's a good time to bring him in your team because I think he can have a very, very strong end of the season now.
What is his ownership and price, Jules?
It's
1.3% he's owned by, which is unbelievable differential territory.
Wow. So, Jules, I remember you flagging him up and he delivered that very same weekend, but you hadn't actually brought him into your team. Have you now acquired him?
I am now for this weekend because, again, you know, I'm a man of the people. So I that's what we do. we give tips to our friends. They right. enjoy it. And then we join the Rafinha love wagon, which is great. But I just didn't have the structure in my team to bring him on. But now that Ziyech has broken my heart too many times, even if he scores a hat-trick today, Rafinha is coming in.
Okay, excellent. Anyone else from Leeds and Palace? Palace coming off the back-to-back wins.
Yes, and for me, Eberechi Eze, we have to talk about him now because, again, the same consistency theme is coming up as well. I think he will have a very strong second half of the season now. And I think he's just a wonderful young player to watch. And again, low ownership for Eze. He still needs to improve, I guess. And I admit that in front of goal and in his decision-making. But he certainly looks at just, 5.8 million. I think he's still a very good price for someone who can have potentially so much attacking return in the creativity and everything.
Both those teams, though, so unpredictable. I mean, we've seen this with Bamford. There's a fair chance that they will, or some of their assets will produce decent returns. But equally, there's a fair chance that they'll give you absolutely nothing. It does make it hard to kind of commit to players from the likes of Leeds, Palace, Saints, I guess, would be in that category as well.
Yeah, but I mean, Eze's last two games, 7 points and 11 points. And again, it's a team that I think he will get the ball quite naturally because he's the creative player. So I think the ball will come to him, and then of course it might not always work because before that he had 2 and 2. So I understand that, but I do think that he got to a point now, especially after the last two games, that if he get that bit of consistency, he can deliver week in and week out. And certainly they will look for him to create, to score, to assist. So I think he's owned by 1% of the managers. So I think right now, even if you leave him on the bench for certain games, at 5.8 million, he could be a really good asset to have.
Jules, do you have him in your team?
No. That, again, it's, you know, one that I give to people.
Okay. But you, so you'd rather have Rafinha over Eze at the moment?
Yes, just right now. But if you can afford both, I think one on the bench, Eze on the bench, and Rafinha on your team could be very clever.
All right. Palace's fixtures at the moment are really, really good.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll touch on that again a little bit later on when we check out the fixture difficulty rating chart. Daniel, what are you giving us a heads up on this weekend?
I'm looking at the biggest game of the weekend, Liverpool-Manchester City. I think there's probably a temptation now, a kind of once bitten, twice shy thing with Liverpool in those home games against weaker teams that we would have normally expected them to absolutely cash in, both in terms of the, you know, defenders getting clean sheets and assisting, and with players like Mohamed Salah, who was the, you know, the most captain player this midweek, and I had him as captain and got us the big 4 points. Yeah, I've just been looking at the intra big six games this season and you know, particularly the lack of goals in them. There's only been 13 goals in the last 8 games between those, you know, traditional big six, and maybe Arsenal and Spurs at the moment don't quite qualify, but it still holds up. Half those games have been 0-0. And I'd just be wary, if you've got two Liverpool defenders, as I have, and one City, then I'll probably lose one Liverpool defender. But I wouldn't rush to get rid of assets based on one big six game this season, because we've seen how cagey they are. And I think Manchester City will probably be pretty happy with a draw. Although Liverpool struggled against Brighton, I think that maintains a lead at the top. And it should have been, when they looked at the fixtures, their toughest game of the season.
So in terms of City's more forward assets like Gundogan, who we know has been great and contributed another assist midweek, or Gabriel Jesus, would you steer clear based on the stalemates that we often see in these fixtures?
I mean, I have Gundogan and Phil Foden, and I'm happy to keep them in because they are, you know, they are cheap. Gundogan is 5.8 million in my team. Foden's only 6.2, and I'm very happy for them to sit there. There's a really nice thing with Phil Foden where he feels like the perfect cheap midfielder at the moment, because he isn't one of those City players who comes on in a game and gets you 1 point and ruins the bench plan. He tends to either start games or stay off the pitch and be held back for future games, which is a really nice thing to have. As I said at the top of the show, I had him in the team this week, but perfectly happy for him not to play a minute if you've got decent bench options.
What about Gabriel Jesus, who's now netted in each of his last 3 starts?
I'm still not wholly convinced. I think City's best move of the match against Burnley was when Sterling had come central and ended up finishing that chance 6 yards out, which was the archetypal City goal between 2017 and 2019. I just wonder if for games like this, they're better with Sterling central. Albeit he doesn't have great returns against his old club, we should say.
The other thing about Gabriel Jesus coming into the picture is the impact that it seems to have on Gundogan's numbers, that he is less productive, less involved in the kind of final parts of attacks when Gabriel Jesus is up there. What have you got, Sam and Jules, in terms of Liverpool and Man City assets, and what are your plans?
I have Gundogan and Salah as my attacking players from those sides, and then I have Ruben Dias at the back for Man City, and I kind of feel like that's okay. 3 feels like an okay number to get away with, I think, in a big game like this. We'll likely play Dias in case what Dan says is true and we get a really boring 0-0 draw, but equally I'll probably play Gundogan and Salah as well. I think if you owned more than that, though, you might be needing to think about doing something there.
Oh, right. So, say, for example, somebody who has Salah and 3 Man City assets, you think that's too much?
I think it is. I don't think you would want that much invested in one game, 4 or 5 players in one game, because there's a lot of managers out there that have Salah and Robertson and 3 City players because of the nice run of fixtures City have been on. For me, I'd be either looking, and I don't think you want to with City, I'd probably just bench somebody from City for this week. But if you've got Robertson as well, I'd probably be looking to shift him out now.
Okay. What about you, Jules?
So before, I want to say that I was at all those nil-nils. I think I'm the jinx because I covered them all for French TV, and I'm going to Liverpool Man City on Sunday. So it's very likely, listeners, that it'll be a nil-nil draw. I'm just putting it out there. I've got Stones and Gundogan, and I'm very happy with them both. And I agree with you on Gundogan, though, when Gabriel Jesus is playing, his runs into the box are less picked than when they play with a false number 9 or, you know, and no striker. And then I've got Bobby Firmino, because I really thought, so Spurs was good, At West Ham, he was rested and then came on, gave an assist. That was okay. And I really thought that would spur him on for the Brighton game. And I even captained him, which was completely silly, I agree, to go back on your point about captains at the start of the show. So I'm not sure Firmino would be there on Sunday. Sorry, Bobby.
Okay. All right, then. What about Man United's clash with Everton, Sam?
Well, this was going to be a fascinating one, isn't it? On the back of that absolute drubbing that Manchester United gave to Southampton in the game that we've just seen. We saw some absolutely huge FPL returns from some of the United players this week, none less than Aaron Wan-Bissaka with a 17-point haul from him, a goal and assist, a clean sheet and two bonus points on the back of an 8-pointer the week before as well. And that was kind of reflected in part by Luke Shaw, who had a fantastic first half of football, got two assists, looked like he was absolutely on for a hatful in that game, and then got withdrawn at half time. Now, he was one of my targets for this weekend's game because I think that moving forward, Manchester United have such nice fixtures that he could be a really, really good pick. Ollie said if he played the second half in the same way as he played the first, it's always a risk. So I think for me, that's a really positive sign if you are a Luke Shaw owner that actually it's not an issue. He's not gone off at halftime because there's anything wrong. It was just protecting him for future games. And again, that's positive because it means that he is their first choice because there was all that talk about Tellers and rotation. I think Martial did come on with a bit of a point to prove in that second half. And we're talking about most people's FPL teams have problems with forwards right now, with Harry Kane out injured, with Jamie Vardy potentially still not back for the weekend. We're not sure about him yet. There's a lot of options in people's FPL teams of gaps that they need to fill. And maybe Martial might be quite a nice differential way to do that.
Okay, there is another candidate who's going to be lining up against United this weekend for Everton, and that's Dominic Calvert-Lewin. How do you feel about him?
So Dominic Calvert-Lewin I bought in ahead of last weekend's action. So I've had him for a couple of game weeks now. He returns in game week 22 for the first time since game week 14. Did get the goal and three bonus points, but he has been on a really bad run of form. And I kind of really bought him in for the two fixtures that we've just had. And he was there to replace Kane while Kane was out injured or is still out injured. I think he did look better. I don't think he will get the same kind of joy against that Manchester United defence as he was able to get against Leeds, because Leeds, the way that they play football, they do provide plenty of opportunities for the opposition to attack. So Calvert-Lewin and his Everton teammates did get a lot of opportunities in that game. And of course, Calvert-Lewin took them. I think it will be interesting to see what happens with Josh King. He came on for 3 minutes at the end of the game in 22 on the back of his arrival on Monday as part of the transfer window. So he's one to watch at 5.5 million. He's really nicely priced from an FPL point of view. And if he starts getting regular game time, he might not be a bad option.
All right, one to keep an eye on. There's another forward choice who I think you'll be flagging up later on, which does look really, really intriguing given the two-side situation that they're going to be facing each other. I'm being a bit cagey about this, but we'll come on to that later on when we look at transfer moves and potential captaincy options later on. Should have a quick word about Aston Villa against Arsenal. Both teams beaten midweek. Arsenal, though, looking lively until red cards proved their undoing as well, away at Molineux against Wolves. Aston Villa, whose form actually of late, although individuals like Grealish have been returning still, has been pretty woeful. Do you have players? Are you is Nicolas Pepe, for example, on your radar as somebody potentially to bring in? Are you convinced about Arsenal going forward? What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I think Pepe is a really good point. Good shout, James. I was going to mention him later if you know differentials or ideas for this week, because playing on the left hand side instead of the right hand side where he usually always played has made a big difference. And that without Tierney playing either. I think it would be even better when Tierney storms on that left-hand side as well and take people away from Pepe. But certainly the confidence, and for someone who I know really well, I can tell you that he really feels like a completely different player right now in the way himself feels and plays. So it could be a really good shot, although they've got also tough games to come after the Villa one. And even Martin Odegaard, who I think at some point will play centrally as a number 10 and rotate with Smith Rowe. But certainly, no one owns him right now, and he's still quite cheap at 6 million, I think. Be interesting to see how he starts, and then keeping in the back of the mind.
On Villa, this was the first... I know they haven't been brilliant recently, but this was the first game week in which I've watched them, and they've looked really tired. I know that Dean Smith has a very settled first 11. There's probably only one or two positions in which he's been prepared to rotate. Maybe that Bertrand Traoré, Trezeguet, or El Ghazi role, they kind of all fit to one position. But I do wonder if there's going to be a bit more rotation now, because they look really, really tired against West Ham. And I don't think he's going to be able to keep picking that same team over and over again.
All right. Excellent. Those are some of the weekend's fixtures. And next up, though, let's take a slightly more long-term view. Long view, everybody. We've dialed down our FDR chart, fixture difficulty rating, to the next six game weeks. And the team that has the easiest run are Crystal Palace, who we were speaking about before. They're away at Leeds this weekend, then home to Burnley, then away at Brighton, then home to Fulham. Then they have Spurs away, and then home to West Brom. Also with very good fixtures, though, Brighton, who we flagged up a little bit before, and another team for whom the calendar is suddenly looking quite kind, Daniel, are Spurs.
Yeah, as ever with Spurs, there's a kind of clanging alarm bell that rings in your mind, because they've not been very good against the worst sides at home this season. But they do play four of the bottom eight in the away table over the next seven matches. And two things I thought were really interesting this week. Firstly, Jose Mourinho left Joe Roden out of his Europa League squad, which was a pretty clear indication that he's going to prioritise the league, and that those Thursday, Sunday schedule shouldn't really harm FPL managers too much, I think. And the second thing is that he's reportedly made up with Dele Alli and spoke about using Alli in the number 10 role and Ndombele as a central midfielder, which against these type of sides has to improve Spurs. It has to make them better. It has to enable them to operate 25 yards from goal rather than 45 yards from goal. So that might help your Kane-Son axis when Kane comes back.
Interesting. Sam was almost doing a little victory dance there while you were discussing that. Sam, are you what Spurs assets have you got likely to bring in? Is Dele Alli in your thinking? And when is Kane due back?
So I have Son. I've kept him. Now, actually, Son's record against West Brom is pretty woeful. He's played seven times against them and not registered a single goal or an assist. So it doesn't bode well for this weekend. But we heard from Mourinho that Kane is due back next week. So either potentially for the Everton FA Cup game, or for more likely, I think, the Manchester City game in game week 24. So I suspect what we might see is Kane on the bench for Everton if he's in that place, just to give him a few minutes towards the end of the game so that he's ready for that Manchester City game the week after. So that is really good news, because Spurs just haven't been the same since Harry Kane's injury against Liverpool. If Dele Alli comes back from his injury with the right attitude, which Mourinho suggests he's going to, he could be a really, really nice differential pick for us as FPL managers.
Wow. What's his ownership at the moment, Sam?
He's owned by 0.5% of the game, James.
And what's he cost?
He's going to cost you 7.4 million of your FPL pounds.
You'd have to take out someone special to put him in. But yeah, it's a great shout. Anything else we should be looking at going forward? What about Chelsea under Thomas Tuchel? We've now had two games. You might have had three by the time you listen to this, FPL manager. But we've had a little bit more time to see what Tuchel's doing. It seems to involve defensive solidity and clean sheets. And as in terms of his starting 11, do we have any clear ideas in terms of assets that we can rely on him to use and to deliver?
I think that the goalkeeper, of course, won't change. The three centre-backs in Rudiger, Thiago Silva and Azpilicueta won't change. So on them, if you fancy a Chelsea asset, go for one of those four. Because I think for the rest, it's pretty much open. In midfield, I think Jorginho has a good shot and I think he will be on penalties. So maybe one to consider. But I think the rest, right now, I think it's too early to know exactly why his strongest 11 or the one that he will play the most is going to be. He's got so many options, and already between the Wolves game and the Burnley games, he changed. I expect him to change again for the Spurs game. So maybe a little bit early, apart from those players that we mentioned, to go for, okay, let's bring Werner or Abraham for sure, because I don't think there's any guarantees that they're going to play regularly.
So my planned move for Marcos Alonso, not so much.
I think it'd be hard for him to bench Chilwell from now until the end of the season. But maybe you can bring Alonso in a kind of games like the Burnley one, where his physicality and, you know, the fact that he's so good like that, and bring him for those kind of games. But Chilwell, I think he's still a better player overall than Marcos Alonso for games where maybe the game is a bit more open. There's more space for him to run into and cross the ball. I don't know. It'd be very interesting to see what Tuchel does in the weeks to come.
Sheffield United away this weekend, then at home to Newcastle, then away at Saints. Daniel?
I think my only exception, I think Joe's absolutely right. I think the only other exception to that might be Callum Hudson-Odoi, purely because he's only 5.7 million. And if we are going to see this kind of Victor Moses-style redemption of a winger at wing-back on the right, there isn't really anyone else in that Chelsea squad that can do that. I can see him changing between Chilwell and Alonso. I can't really see, unless he's going to play Christian Pulisic as a wing-back, I can't really see anyone else. Maybe, but he's not really a wing-back, is he? So that's the one, I think, purely because he's only 5.7 million and obviously he gets forward so much.
So keep an eye on Chelsea, and if you must invest, get the centre-backs or the goalie. Up next, as some big guns continue to blank, we ask who you've been hanging on to, despite their form. This week we asked you on Twitter, hashtag FPLPodTweet, which big names, like Mo Salah, who blanked for 5 weeks, then scored in game week 21, are you sticking with despite their poor form? Let's have a look. Kumar says Bobby Firmino. He's not a bad differential as well. There you go, Jules.
Yeah, I'm not the only one.
Yeah. Kumar also mentions Patrick Bamford and the main man, Son. Football Addict says, I'm sticking with James Rodriguez. I'm pretty sure he'll deliver this week. Very possible. FBL John, Son. No matter what happens against Chelsea Thursday night, he's coming into my team and captaining against West Brom.
Wow.
Crikey, is that wise, Sam?
I'll just repeat what I said before about Son having never scored a goal or made an assist against West Brom.
That's true. Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford did well midweek after not doing so much. Neo FBL says, I stick with them always. I gave Bruno the armband and I had Rashford and I managed 43 points from only those two players. Well done, you. And FLC, possibly the most touching display of loyalty here, says Werner always. Crikey. Can you see that coming good for FLC anytime this season?
If there's one manager that can make Werner get back to his best, has to be Thomas Tuchel. So I can see the hope there. I mean, I've got Hakim Ziyech, who's killing me every week, really. I mean, match day, game week 7 and 8 against, I think it was Burnley Sheffield United, he got 14 and 11. And since then, never more than 3. And yet, because I love him so much, I love that left foot. And every time I watch him, I said, oh, he's such an amazing player. Even if he does nothing, I still have him.
It's difficult though, isn't it, Jules? Because if he was a friend of yours, you'd have to leave him out of the team. Because you'd be...
Yeah, I've had a few messages lately saying like, why don't you put me in your team? And I was like, because you're going to come and be rubbish. That's why. So I try to not put friends in my team right now.
I see. It is difficult being a manager, knowing how much patience to afford, particularly the high value assets like, I'm going to say, Mo Salah. Because knee-jerk reactions and reacting too soon is one of the biggest mistakes you can make. But equally, hanging on too long, just the millions you're burning off every week. Mo Salah, for example, I checked it out this morning. His points divided by cost this season, because everyone says he's going to come good. But he's actually ranking 86th in terms of value for money in FPL for the season so far. 86th.
With me, it's the premium price defenders that I have stuck with and already slightly resent. Someone like Andy Robertson, who to buy now is 7.4 million, but he's got more than a third of his points this season in three games. He had a 10, a 12 and an 11, I think. And that's a third of his points. And when you see teams like Brighton with those lower picks, with those differential defenders keeping regular clean sheets, and you think, it's all very well you being 7.2 million and everyone having you, but if you're not providing assists anymore and your team's a bit sluggish, and yet I know as soon as I take him out, Liverpool will go on a run where he provides two assists in a game and that's that.
I think one of the things, maybe one of the reasons that we've hung on to some of these players, and this is true with me about Mo, is that there aren't that many other high-priced assets who are delivering that you actually need the money for, that you want to make the swap across for. Just if you're curious, by the way, about that points divided by cost, value for money thing, the player who's currently delivering the most in FPL for the season so far is?
Got to be Souček.
No, it's Martinez, but Souček's in second place.
Yeah.
Right, with Pope, another keeper, in third. Then you've got Justin, James Justin, the incredible James Justin, fifth. Cresswell is ninth. And up next, in 10th, is a certain Callum Wilson.
Who?
Sam, you have a certain theory about.
Yeah, I think Callum Wilson could be a really, really nice pick for this week. I mean, he has been on good form over the last couple of weeks in games where we weren't really expecting Callum Wilson to do very much. But this time around in game week 23, he comes up against the Southampton team who have just been absolutely embarrassed in their last game. And not only that, are now without the two suspended players, couple that with the injured players. I think they're down to like 12 or 13 players that they're missing from their squad right now. So they are at the bare bones. Now, they aren't keeping clean sheets. Callum Wilson is in a good run of form. Newcastle seem to be, for me anyway, watching them, they seem to have recovered from the long-term effects of COVID that they were still showing. So Maximin is back, and that makes Callum Wilson a far better FPL asset in my view. And I think if you are chasing in mini leagues, if you are looking for a differential pick and you've got problematic strikers up top, Callum Wilson for me is one that I would absolutely be looking at this week. And I think he could even be a really nice differential captain.
How much does he cost?
He's 6.8 million and owned by 25% of the managers.
So whilst he's not exactly a differential in terms of people's teams, he won't be highly captained this week because there are other captaincy options out there that people will look towards instead. So I think if you want to make Callum Wilson work for you in terms of rank rises, putting the captain's armband on him could really help.
Right. After Saints at home this weekend, the next two look difficult for Newcastle. They're away at Chelsea and then away at Man United before hosting Wolves and travelling to West Brom. So be prepared perhaps to have him on the bench for a couple of those fixtures, or maybe no, maybe try your luck. We'll have more of your captaincy choices next. All right, biggest question of the week, who to captain? Because it's so very painful when it goes wrong. We'll come into that very shortly. First of all, though, have you guys got any transfers that you have planned, have made, have suddenly decided against? Daniel?
Yeah, I'm already drafting an angry email because Sam has talked me out of bringing Heung-min Son into my team for West Brom at home. I was going to make two transfers, which I'm quite happy not to. So I think I'm actually going to trade down one of my Liverpool defenders for Aaron Cresswell.
Nice one. Jules, what about you?
I think Rafinha will come in for the EIG. Hakim, I'm sorry if you're listening, but this is the end of us.
Okay. And Sam?
I, for my sins, still have two Southampton defenders. I have Kyle Walker-Peters and I still have McCarthy as my goalkeeper. And the time has come for them both to leave my team. So I'm likely to just go McCarthy to Martinez because even if he doesn't keep a clean sheet, he gets a million save points. So he's providing a nice opportunity. And I think I'm going to take Kyle Walker-Peters up to Luke Shaw.
That does sound a very attractive option indeed. Okay, now you've told us about one interesting captaincy choice in Callum Wilson. Is that the one you're actually planning to make?
No, but I am planning to go a little bit rogue this week because I don't want to get involved in that Liverpool-Man City game. That feels a bit difficult to call. I don't trust Son with the armband against West Brom, given how Spurs have been performing lately and the stats that I've mentioned with him. So I think I'm going to captain Antonio this week. Got Fulham, who have been massively better. They've improved dramatically, but West Ham are in a really, really nice run of form. Antonio has come back with a bang since his injury. And I think for me, he could be a really nice way to shore up some captaincy points, but which I really, really need right now. I keep getting captaincy blanks and I think Antonio might be the one to break that curse.
Right. Okay, Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, I'm singing from the same hymn sheet as Sam. I've got two options, which is Bruno Fernandes or Patrick Bamford as my left field choice. They've got
that is bold.
They've got Palace at home. He's got 23 points in his last two game weeks combined, including a 15 away at Leicester. Leeds are a bit better away from home, but I think he could be a really good pick. It depends how brave I'm feeling or stupid I'm feeling come Saturday morning.
Jules, what about you?
It'd be Bruno or Antonio. So I get a bit of best world, both of best, Dan and Sam. I'm not sure. Maybe I think Antonio is pretty good against Fulham this week.
Yeah. I mean, it does look like a really good fixture and lower ownership or lower captaincy. You'd imagine than Bruno, which for a lot of us trying to catch up is huge because, as I mentioned, since we've all got more or less the same teams anyway, or largely depending on the same assets, the armband is increasingly important in getting the green arrows. There you go. Get your teams done, listener, by 11 o'clock on Saturday morning, 90 minutes before Villa against Arsenal. If you need more help or resources in the meantime, head across to fancy.premierleague.com, where you'll find the FPL show and loads of great scouting articles and stats and things. That's it for this FPL podcast, though. So many, many thanks to Daniel, to Jules, and to Sam. Best of luck with Game Week 23. We'll be back reacting to it all and looking forward to what could be a complex Game Week 24, maybe with an extra fixture or two thrown in a week's time. So do make sure you join us for that. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.